This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 645 with Gavin Campbell, recorded on May 8th, 2025. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. Spring is on the prowl here. Gavin, we're going to talk about, you got a new lawnmower out. Is your grass growing? I'm assuming your grass,
the grass is growing. The grass is growing. Yeah. But I'm limiting how much it can grow, and it's fun.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that here in a second. Yep. But the grass, I should have mowed twice this week. I mowed Saturday, and then I was looking at it tonight, and I'm like, oh, if I didn't have Home Gadget Geeks, I would probably be out mowing tonight. It's just that time of the year where, at least here in Nebraska, you know, and I put fertilizer down 2 weeks ago, years ago, I had a neighbor next door, older guy, and I was putting fertilizer down. He said, don't encourage it. I was like, well, all right, I see what you mean.
I get what he's saying. Yeah. No, last weekend we did the raking. Our first rake, so we cleared all that out. I threw down some seed. I gave it the first mow. You know, you throw down the seed and the birds start to come back too because they see the seed. And so then I turned on the sprinkler on the birds, but then the birds were bathing while they were eating the seed. So, you can't win. And then you waited for the worms to come up.
You created the buffet is what you did. Yes,
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, they had some salad and then some meat. And they were just like in the water. They're just like dancing around. They're like, thank you, Mr. Campbell. And you're like, oh, I hate you birds. Well, we'll post the show with some world-class show notes, and we'll have a few out there tonight out at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. If you are one of those, thank you for doing that each and every month. You guys are super faithful. If you're not and you want to join the team, I just have one $5 plan a month. You can do it for 1 month or as long as you want. theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And then if you want to use the Amazon affiliate link on the site, just head out to theaverageguy.tv. You'll see upper right-hand corner, there's a red link there. You can click through to Amazon, and then anything you purchase supports the network. Always appreciate you guys doing that as well. Then big thanks to Ed Sullivan, who joined us last week. We caught up on all the accessories that he'd put into his car and that was using on his car. It was a fun episode, Ed. Thanks for joining me. He's taking a much needed vacation, and we wish him safe travels as he goes. Gavin Campbell is joining me tonight. You know Gavin, and you know he's got some great stuff. Gavin, welcome to Home Gadget Geeks.
Thank you. You know, I guess it's every quarter now I'm popping my head in here.
I think so. Well, last time you were on, we spent some time. You had a lot of gadgets, and then right at the end, you were getting ready to upgrade your power, which this should not geek me out, but I get, like, when you said that, I'm like, oh, I want to be there. I don't know what it is about that changeover. I've been watching there's a couple YouTube videos of just electricians that go out, and this is all they do is upgrade panels from 100 amp service to 200 amp service, which seems to be, for most people, about the right place to land, especially if you're going to charge an electric vehicle. You need a 200 amp service. What drove you to change? You changed your service out. We're going to talk about it a little bit before we move on. What drove your panel upgrade?
Basically, my current panel that was down there, I was still on fuses. Oh. So it was a really old panel. I mean, it worked. But, you know, I guess when I started putting in my server rack and all that stuff and then the demands for power, and then I realized that the plug that the server rack was on was tied to the bathroom upstairs. So whenever the wife used her hair dryer, it knocked out power to my server rack, you know, and that just drove me nuts. So I was like, you know what? It's time to let me just get a quote, you know, like it started at that. And the quote came in so good that I was like, let's just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not cheap, but it is, I think I paid a couple thousand for mine. Yep. And the guy came in for 2 days, ran a new line, new mast, completely new box. Bonded it. So the neutral and the ground are now bonded in that original box here in the U.S. That's code. Well, it depends on the area. Some want you to bond it on the outside. Here in Nebraska, we bond it on the inside. And then he took a look at a few of my wires that were questionable and said, hey, do you want me? I can redo these for extra whatever. And I did. In some cases, I did. I had a box he showed me that was burnt on the inside. He goes, this box saved your house from burning down. I just want to show it to you kind of thing. Did you, as he was going through, or as they were going through on this, did you get any surprises on it, or was it pretty standard?
No, it was pretty standard. I mean, the most surprises is when he looked at it and he saw how many circuits were kind of on the same fuse. Yeah. So he was like, you know, one fuse had four different circuits on it. You know, I mean, my previous box was like maxed out too. There was no room in it, nothing.
Right.
And that's the only surprise. And it's just, I got a lot more breathing room now. So I feel so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm assuming you had a pretty big box, 60 or 40 or something along those lines, and they probably used half or two thirds of them, and you got some room for expansion if you wanted to put more things in there.
Lots of room. So you probably only use like half the panel at this point, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I could put circuits in for days and I'd be more than good.
It's kind of nice. It is. You live in a 50s house? Is that, do you know when your house was built?
It was in the 80s.
Oh,
it doesn't.
Oh, wow.
Still fuses.
Okay. That's like the tail end.
Yeah. That's
like the very end of those.
I know.
Yeah. Well, no, good on you. I mean, they worked, but good on you. And then I think think back, lights used to be 100 watts. Like if you got a really bright light, standard lights were 60 watts. You know, a really bright incandescent was 100 watts. I mean, today the lights are like 3, and it's the computers that are drawing the power. We've completely switched the paradigm, you know, in draw. It used to be if we think of a house as upstairs, the living area, and downstairs is kind of the utility area, used to be probably the upstairs carried the majority of the, you know, your fridge and your stove and then all these incandescent lights. Now the fridge is super efficient. Stoves, well, maybe if you've got gas, but like an electric stove, still pretty intense. We've replaced the washer. I'm surprised at how efficient these things are as far as the power draw. And it is a little bit more. I mean, my computers probably draw the most in the house right at this point. So a pretty big switch, right? Did you have that same kind of, as you were going through stuff, I'm assuming the electrician was trying to kind of guess like, okay, here's the loads and here's where we want to put on each circuit, right?
Yeah, and he was like, when I moved into the house, like you talk about light bulbs, one of the first things I did is I swapped every light bulb out for LEDs.
Yeah.
Right. So that alone, because you do the math on that, even because I have a bunch of floodlights around the house too. Mm-hmm. And you do the math on that, you realize how much power all that really uses up and how much it costs you. So at the time, they had sales on LED bulbs and stuff. So you got them for like pennies each. And I just did a swap and I bought extra. So he was impressed with that. But I also labeled my panel. So, you know, he was like, you went all out with this. I took an Excel spreadsheet and I drew out every line and wrote down where everything was. So he knew exactly where everything was. He says, nobody really has something like this. It made his job that much easier, you know. And even after he was done, I still went through and relabeled some stuff because he got a few wrong. But that makes his job easier. It also makes my life easier, you know. If I want to change a switch, I know exactly what breaker it's on just by looking at the little spreadsheet.
Yeah. One of the hacks Sarah showed me this week was, she got this off TikTok, is to write down, so you number all your panels, and on the back of the plate, you know, you write down what number that corresponds to, or somewhere on the device or on the light, you write down the number, right? That way, when you're working on it, you can just go, oh, that's 14. You go down and switch off number 14. So I think she's like, you want to do that? I'm like, today?
Yeah. You see, my problem, I would do that, but over time, I'm pretty sure I'll move a plate around or, you know, maintaining it. You know, I suck at that. So
no. Did you, so now that you've got a new, you know, bigger box, you got some room, any thought to going with some automation from a sensing standpoint, a power that sense, you know, that orange sense box, or looking at kind of monitoring the power in and out?
Yes, I have the what's it called again? You caught me off guard with this one. Yeah,
no worries.
Energy sensing Emporia.
Okay.
I have the Emporia View. which basically is like clamps you could put around each circuit, and it will report on each one. I have not installed it yet. I have an electrician friend that, you know, I got to take golfing one day, and then I'll bring him in, and he'll install it for me. So once I get that set up, it will be cool, because then I'll get a live view of how much power every circuit's using.
Yeah.
And because I've dedicated circuits a little better. So for example, my server rack, we have two dedicated circuits to the power plug right there. So I can know how much all my server and tech is now using just by looking at the reports from that and stuff like that. So it'll be cool.
Yeah. Well, and you can get a little carried away, but I mean, that's the point. Right.
Yeah. That is the point.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Does that have like appliance sensing so that it will try to detect by the voltage or whatever the wave, what it is?
No. And you're thinking of the Sense, I think.
Yeah. It's called, no, right? I am. The orange.
Has the monitoring of the circuit, and it can detect a dryer or something like that based on, I guess, the amps or something in the waveform of the electricity. It's a cool technology. I know, I think it was Seth that had one and installed it at one point, and he said it was cool, but it wasn't the most accurate thing either. Right. So, you know, it's one of those things. I never went with that one.
What do you think? You know, they've got these plugs that you can, you know, put in there that do have, they'll keep track of the electricity use at the plug level.
Yep.
You know, TP-Link has them, and everybody's making them. Although the last couple times I went to buy them, I bought the wrong ones that don't have the energy monitoring. But what do you think about like on those devices you want to keep track of? Washer and dryer would be one. Your stove, no, that wouldn't work because that's not a 110 outlet. But what do you think about using some of those home automation devices or those plugs to let those track at an individual basis and trying to figure it out?
I actually do use, they're cool for doing some automation. So I actually have one on my washing machine, and I can, it lets me know when the washing machine's running or not. And I, you know, based on an automation, it notifies me when it's done, etc. So that's one thing. I also utilize one. So I have a power strip. I think it's made by Zoos. And each of the plugs in that power strip have energy sensing, and I have all my battery charges plugged into this power switch. And what I do is, you know, you turn on the power and it kind of just sits there, Home Assistant monitors it. And as soon as the power drops below a certain amount, for a certain amount of time, it knows the battery is now done charging. So now turn off the power strip, turn off that outlet, you know, and it notifies me, hey, your battery's ready, good to go.
It's that trickle charge that can add up over time. It used to just be a few devices. I remember in the 80s, they used to talk about like, oh, your VCR, the light that's flashing, you know, right. That's taking a little bit of energy kind of thing. But you only had maybe one or two devices like that, you know, and now everything is drawing all your Amazon devices, all of your Google like devices. They're all pulling stuff. TJ says he's got the Emporia, though version 2 says they use theirs to automate dryer washer alerts, as well as track general usage. Yeah, I went back and forth on that during this latest phase of all the electrical work that I was doing to put a backup in the house, you know, a generator backup in the house. And I kind of decided that's a rabbit hole. I don't want to go down.
I'm also in the mindset right now where I'm just like, do I really want to know? Like, do I really want to know how much my server is using? Because if the wife sees that number, you know, like, is she going to make me turn this thing off? You know, like, I don't want to feel, I'll just pay the bill. You know,
I mean, I'm running everything through, all the electronics are running through this Blue Eddy battery that I have. And of course, it's got a big display right on the front, right? It'll show you how many watts. Sarah doesn't care, just to be honest. But, you know, we actually had, so this week, last week, our washer went down. And we didn't know it right away. She pinged me at work one of the mornings and said, hey, did you turn the washer off last night? You know, and I was like, no, not me. And Sammy was like, no, definitely not me. So she ran it again, and then the next night did it again. It went off again, and she's like, I think it's broken. Like, I think we're... So we called the repair guy. He came out. It's like $800. We paid $800 for that thing originally, you know? But it was, so we went... I was like, buy something that will last a while. So we got a Speed Queen, which is a really... I mean, this thing is a tank. I keep expecting military to come out of the hatch right at any time, because this thing is absolutely bulletproof. But I kind of wonder, it's got me thinking a little bit. I wonder what kind of, did that also come with more energy draw, right? I actually at one point I asked her, I said, do we need to plug that into the battery backup? Kyle Wilcox in our Discord group recently had a flood in his basement. The sump pump went out. He asked about, like, how do I back this up? I recommended a solar generator of some kind. I mean, again, just because it's a solar generator, it doesn't mean you have to have it connected to solar. But he picked that up. And then we've had some conversations about battery backing up sump pumps, which is probably not a bad idea. Now, get those batteries off the basement floor. If something goes wrong, you don't want those flooding, right, as well. I just have... just Fukushima. That should teach us, don't keep your generators at the ground level, right?
Yes.
Type deal.
Yeah.
But have you thought of individually, like, backing up? There's battery backups now that are thin and long that you can put behind your fridge that will keep, right? Have you thought about going that route with backing up some of your stuff?
No, the I have a couple UPSs that I actually pulled out of my rack because I put a rack mount one in. So I have the non-rack mountable ones. And the only place I've put them right now is in my office here. So, my main computer is, like, my work computers are laptops. They have batteries in them, but my main computer is still, is a desktop. So if I get a power blip or something like that, I'm not going to lose everything that's on there. I can properly shut it down. So that's the only battery backup I have. But when I did my panel, they did put in a transfer switch, right? Oh, so I have I have a 30 amp transfer. I don't have a generator. My neighbor has a generator, and we'll just pull it out and I just plug it in. We start up the generator and I can just power my fridge and run an extension cord to his house, and he can power whatever off of it too. And we're good for that.
Man, he's okay. So you're going to get the juice. And he gets the 110 extension cord? Is that his generator? Hold on, make sure I got this right. His generator. You're getting the 30 amp juice.
I'll run two extension cords for him.
He's getting them easily, 20 amp. It's not bad.
To keep us all happy. And then we'd pull out the barbecues and take care of our meals and stuff.
Oh, for
sure. We have it planned.
Yeah. No, it's so, that part's so easy, actually, but it's the fridge. That's the, like in my case, it was the fridge that was driving me nuts, right?
Yeah.
And making sure, because when it's food spoiling for me, I just lose my mind. I do not know why that's such a big deal to me.
Yeah.
But when that stuff starts to spoil, I am like, oh, I paid good money for all that stuff, right? And there's so many ways to, to protect it. I at one point in time, I thought, well, maybe down in the basement, I'll get an EcoFlow that can handle all the basement stuff and have one of those and make that as a backup. Now, it's a $2,500 deal right there versus the Blue Yeti I have now is $500. So, you're like, you kind of weigh that. That's when I saw those little flat batteries that go behind your fridge.
I can't remember how long those last for your fridge, though, because when I'm thinking of an outage, and having to worry about it, I'm thinking of a day or two as well, right? Like we have almost like a outage plan. Like if we were going into a long-term outage, I have a deep freezer in my basement. It's not even half full. Like we just have a few things in there. He would bring his stuff over, dump it in my deep freeze. We turn on the generator, keep all his food cold, my food cold. Everything's taken care of. We have a plan.
Man, how do I be your neighbor? That's awesome. We'd be crazy.
He's moving in a year, so we're going to miss him.
Oh, boy. Yeah, take advantage of it while you can.
Yeah, I know.
Well, so it feels, I'm sure it feels good to have all that electrical work done and buttoned up. Labeled. You put a surge, didn't you put a surge on
when the surge protect, and that was another driving factor because I always wanted a surge protector.
Yeah,
whole house. I'm whole house a surge. Whole house surge protector, yeah. But there was no room in my old panel to put one in. And because of all the light, the smart switches I have, all the devices I have, you know, I wanted to protect them. So I put this in and I feel so much better about it. Like, we had lightning storms since it's been in there, and I'm almost like, hit my house, you know. No, I don't want it to hit my house, you know, but you know what I mean. I feel no, I'm like, oh, yeah, we're good.
And I'm the guy who on the podcast said we had a storm and the power didn't go down and I was disappointed. Like, so I'm that guy too. I understand that, like, you want to use this stuff. We our utility provider years ago, 10-15 years ago, came out and installed a whole home surge protector on here. Yeah. So I pay some kind of rental fee for that, kind of $4 a month or something crazy like that. Pretty cheap. And that price has never gone up. So even with inflation, it's $5, right? And they ran some things, and they've got a device that kind of does that for me. Thought about doing it in my own box, but the electrician was like, no, you've already got this. It works. If it ever stops working, they'll come out and replace it, kind of thing. Yeah. And so that works out pretty well. So good. Yeah, that is I'm assuming they came out and ran new ground rods for you and got everything from a grounding. Like, this is another thing when you upgrade your service, there's new grounding standards. And so you get a whole new set of, they ground out to the water. Every municipality is different, but in most places in the U.S., you get a ground out to your water metal going out, and then you get a couple ground rods, you know, driven 9 feet down or whatever in the ground. I used to have to do that when I was in the military when we ground stuff.
We ground to our, I think it's to the incoming water line they ground it to, right? Yes. And I only know this because I was following this guy around as he, like,
oh,
like,
I bet.
I was, and I had to keep telling him, listen, I'm not judging. I'm not, don't worry about me. I just am learning. I just want to see this happen, right? And you know, I may ask questions, and it's just me, my curiosity. But he did run new ground wire and to the water thing. And yeah. I have an open basin, so it was easy for him.
Yeah, I think in today's world, if you're a tech guy and you're still like, if your panel is struggling, it's the best money spent. Like, I think it's great to get it upgraded, get an electrician in. Yes, it's an investment. You're going to spend some money. It's going to be thousands of dollars. Just, but that is one of those things, especially if you own an older house. I think it's worth to get an electrical inspection and have somebody come in and replace that out. They, couple days to replace yours?
Mine was like just in a day, not even a full day. It was because, again, open basement, lots of room for them to work. Everything was labeled. Their job was so easy. You know, and you know, just going on that, if you're going to upgrade the panel, I also recommend just bump up the amperage. I went to 200 amps, and the reason why, if you can, right, and it's not ridiculous, but it future-proofs the home, especially, you know, we're going towards EVs and stuff like that now too. Yeah. So future-proof it for that. And the way I look at it too is if I resell the house, I'll just put that in the sale cost and get the money back. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's kind of a standard now. I think most people are expecting that. Well, that's probably not true. I don't think most people know they even care. I don't think
a lot of people don't care.
Yeah. They come in. I have 150, which is odd. That was, you know, again, I had this replaced 15 years ago. So it was a different day.
Yeah.
And could I run an EV off of it? Probably without an upgrade. But if I was going to put an EV charger in, I would probably get an electrician to run and get OPPD, our power company, to run a new line if that's what they needed. And I'd probably amp that. I'd probably up it to 200 amps.
Yeah.
Just to be level set with everybody else. So, well, cool. You sent me some pictures and appreciate you doing that. That I kind of geek out on that kind of stuff. And I was like, that is sweet to see. My favorite is when you have a really good electrician and they run the wires all nice and neat. And sometimes they can even zip tie them to get them, you know, to kind of make it all of it neat. That is, to me, that's worth just, that's art. Like
the little Walmart things, because he stapled them and they all go up nicely. And then even on the other side, he actually drilled through the backboard and hid them behind the board. And I was like, the little things that keep it clean. I was impressed.
Yeah. No, that's super cool. Well, congrats on that. That's a big deal, and I think that's super cool. You alluded to this last time. You got a robot lawnmower.
Yes.
And you hadn't got out of the box yet because it was winter, but summer or spring is here. Talk a little bit about what you're doing with your new mower.
So we got the Segway Navimo, and it's the I-Series one, which does, I think, up to 5,000 square feet it will cover. Yes, I finally got to install this thing. And right now I only have it set up to do my backyard. That was the initial test. I'm going to probably expand it to my front yard this weekend and start having it do that as well. But I'm loving this thing. You know, like, I've never mowed my backyard lawn so much in my life. Like, sometimes I just, you know, I go to the A-Lady and just tell it to start mowing just for the kicks and giggles, because it's nothing. It's not like it's using gas or anything, just a little electricity. I'm the envy of the neighbors. But when they saw that, you know, at first they laugh. But then when they're out there pushing the lawnmower, you know, you get that random question. So how much did that cost again? You know, and I'm loving it. So
review unit, or did you pay for it yourself?
It was a review unit, but I think this one's come down. The I-Series has come down to about, I think in US dollars, about $1,000, maybe $1,200. Okay. So they are dropping in price and getting very, very affordable. And I know you had Erin on the show a few weeks back, and she gets a bunch of these to review. And she has her favorites probably. This is the only one I've ever gotten. Right. And yeah, I'm just loving it right now.
What's the name of it again?
It's the Segway Navimo, and it's the I-Series one.
Yeah, I-Series. This is the time of year, like, I think I would be doing the same thing if I had one. I'd have it mow. It's as much as it can.
Yeah.
The grass is growing so fast right now. I should have been out mowing today. I may do it tomorrow. Nah, I'll probably wait till Saturday. But it's going to be thick. I may have to put my mower all the way up, you know, to the very top, mow it on Saturday, and then drop it down one, mow it again on Sunday, just to kind of keep the clippings at bay. How many passes do you think it's made on the lawn so far?
This week alone, I probably sent it out 3 times. It's like the way I say it to my neighbor, I go, it's like having a kid that you could tell to mow the lawn whenever you want, and it will never argue with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It just goes and does it. And yeah, and sometimes because my backyard's so small, sometimes I'll just watch it. It's so quiet.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even know the blades were spinning until I saw the grass clippings. Uh-huh. It's that quiet.
Yeah. Does it do a pretty good job? I mean, are you satisfied with the way it's cutting it? How's it handling obstacles? Is it bumpy? Is the drive pretty good on it? Talk a little bit about that.
So when you first set it up, the first thing you do is you drive it around your yard. So it then calculates where the best place to put the antenna is, because it uses GPS, right? After that, then you got to drive it around your yard to say, this is the area, draw out like the area it's going to mow. So if you have like iffy areas that you're like, I don't really want it to go in there, I would avoid that. Now, this thing's not going to give you 100% like coverage. It's not, kind of like having the robot vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, every now and then you're going to have to go out there and trim the edges and get that stuff. But it's going to do the hard work for you. So it really does a good job when you're designing the map. Even in the app, you can say stuff like, this is called what they call a ride-along path. And that's the area where like the grass would meet like the sidewalk. So it knows to kind of overlap it in a way so that it gets the edge in a way.
Yeah.
It does a lot of things like that. You can choose. I haven't done this yet. Seth told me that this is a feature, but you could choose the direction you want it to go. So you can't I don't think you can randomize it, but if you have like a steep hill, for example, this thing's supposed to be able to handle 30-degree hills or 35 if you get the upgraded
wheels. Wheeled. Is it wheeled or tracked?
It's wheeled.
Wheeled, okay.
Wheeled.
And two wheels or four?
Two big wheels. The other two wheels are just for the turning and stuff that, right?
Right on.
But like on that hill, I can program it so it goes side to side and not directly up the hill.
Got it.
Type of thing to help and stuff like that. So
it
does a pretty good job. It has an auto mode where it would automatically map out your yard for you, and it has a camera built into it, and it uses the camera to determine your yard for you. When I did that mode, it worked pretty good, but I ended up just doing it myself again just to get it better. But even when it's mowing itself, it's using its camera too. So if there was an animal that has animal detection, if it detects an animal in the lawn, it will avoid the animal and go around it. Or if it detects something else in the lawn that shouldn't be there, it will go around it. It has something called channels. And channels is like, if you want to go from one area of your lawn to another area of your lawn, like say, a, like in my backyard where I have it positioned, it's kind of got to go around the pool to get to the lawn. Right. And I was iffy at first, but then when you realize it's programmed as a channel, so it never will get close to the pool. It knows to ride the fence along the back of the pool and then get to the lawn. And then, you know, when it's done, it rides the same channel back to the charging station. So it's really cool. It's got a lot of smarts in it. I was actually shocked.
That's cool. Yeah. I'd always be like, I have some, I have some concrete, like broken up concrete that we use. We called it rubble stone back in the day, right? And I made some, I made some beds with it. It was, you know, it was extra stuff and it was fairly inexpensive, so we used it. When I mow, I have to be really careful as I go around the rubble stone because there's edges that stick out.
Yeah.
So I would, that may be for me a potential area where you got to run, because, you know, there is some give on the, you know, the exact location those right in, and I would be afraid it may get a little too close and hit the stone, and then I think it would hit an object, so it's going to back up. And
it doesn't use bump technology; it uses its camera. So if it's riding towards the fence and it knows that it will see that fence, it will actually stop and turn, right, for whatever reason. And like I said, you would map out your lawn so it stays far enough from that so it wouldn't bump into that, and then you have to go around with your weed whacker afterwards and trim it. So it's reducing the work.
Sammy says, because we were talking about getting a robot lawnmower, same thing with the robot vacuum cleaner. She's like, Dad, those things, there's two things that give you exercise. Do you really want you really want to get rid of them, kind of thing? And I was like, that's kind of true. You know, at least on Sundays, we get the house vacuumed. And on Saturdays, I get the lawn mowed. This time of year, you start thinking, I'm never going to stop mowing the lawn. And then pretty soon the heat comes on, the grass slows down, and you're like, oh, I wish those growing like it. It looks so good. This is the time of year I always tell people, everybody's a lawn hero in May.
Yes.
It looks so good. The weather, the sun's not bad yet. The heat's not there. The weeds, for the most part, haven't crept in. Mine are creeping in pretty good. And so you're like, oh, man, I am such a good lawn guy. And then July and August just kill you, right?
Yes.
Yeah, just kill you. Well, it'll be interesting to see how you like it through the summer. That's always the, you know, that's kind of the trick is, you're probably going to back that down to once a week, maybe, or twice a week in the summer. You wouldn't think. And then I'd be interested in knowing, like, I've always worried about this, is the, because you can run it more, does it compact or does it create ruts in your lawn because of the wheels, right? It's not a heavy thing. It's not that heavy like a lawnmower, but still, if you're running it more often, I think you run the risk of that. I don't know. Any thoughts on ruts or places like it mows the same way in every place, and so you get kind of those lines in your grass, so to speak?
Well, when it mowed, I could see the lines in the grass. It makes it look nice, you know.
Right,
but I did notice the second time I sent it out, it was actually doing different paths. Right, so it wasn't following the exact same lines. It was going at a slightly different angle. So I'm not too worried about that. The wheels aren't very aggressive. You can get more aggressive wheels if you wanted to, but they're not too aggressive, and it's pretty nice. I'm not too worried about that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and I just keep flirting with this, and then I'm like, no, I like push mowing my, you know, there's something satisfying about it. I want to, and then I'm like, no, I don't know. I kind of like being out there. I talk to the neighbors, and so it's a good time. Head by all. Well, we'll check next time you're on. We'll check back in. It'll be summer. You know, it'll be the dregs of summer the next time.
Yeah.
We'll get it figured out. and quiz you on it. Coming up, I didn't even know this was a thing. Home Assistant Community Days are happening. What, Gavin, is there anything Home Assistant can't do?
No. Home Assistant is honestly, it's the future, I think. They just announced, they had, I think, a State of the Open Home or their yearly little event. They have a stream and everything like that. And they announced that they're now installed on 2 million homes. You know, last year it was 1 million homes. So they've doubled their installation base. And that kind of shows the momentum behind it. And they've also shifted a lot of focus on the user interface and, you know, ease of setup and stuff like that. So it's good. They're now opening up to a lot more, not as geeky people. Yeah. But yeah, the Home Assistant Community Day is an event. I don't know where they came up. This is the first ever, but around the world, they have events in many different cities around the world. People just register in their city that they want to host an event. And then I think it's Missy from the Home Assistant team will then post it on their site as an official event. And then people can then sign up that they're now coming to it. So in TJ, is hosting one in Ohio.
Oh, nice.
Right. So, nice. You know, he's got an, event space for it. He's got, you know, giveaways planned, you know, talking items planned, all sorts of stuff. He's doing a lot of work with it. He's making it a true event. The one I'm going to is in Toronto. I didn't set that one up. It was another guy, but I did reach out to him and talk to him about, you know, bringing some giveaways or, you know, because I have like a box, and I'm not going to say it's a box of junk, but it's a box of items that I've gotten that I may not have implemented, or I did at one point and I don't need it anymore. So I was going to take some of them and, you know, I told him maybe we can have a swap, you know, a device swap, you know, somebody may have something I like, you know, swap. I have a camera here. If you want a nice little camera that I don't use anymore, stuff like that. Right. So our organizer pretty much just said, it's open. Like, he didn't have anything planned. He was just going to have some beers. You know, he got a space that can hold up to 100 people, you know, but he's really open. You know, when I told him all this stuff, he's like, that would be great. So if you're a Home Assistant user, or, you know, a Home Assistant curious, or, you know, just want to go hang out and talk home automation, look up a local event. See if there's one close to you and take a trip out.
Here in the U.S., looks like Michigan, L.A., Redmond. I'm assuming that's Redmond, Washington. Vancouver, Austin, Twin Cities, Minneapolis, Houston again. Detroit. I don't know how Detroit gets one. Chicago, Charlotte. There are a bunch. There's TJ's, Columbus, Ohio.
Yes. Yeah.
And this kind of reminds me of the old Home Service Show meetup days, right? You know, we do those in Indy, and a bunch of folks would come out. This might be, I wonder if they'll do this again next year. Too late for me this year. Be fun to have an Omaha version of this.
It may just, may start planning from now, because I know the European ones are bigger. I think it was Paulus that said, I can't remember where exactly it was, but he has actually a waiting list for his event. You know, for one of the events up there, they have 80 people on the waiting list, and, you know, it's just like, the Toronto one, new people are registering like every day. And as the event gets closer, I think you're going to see a lot of people just register, you know, just wait until last minute.
Well, we just had the most capitalistic meetup in the world here in Omaha last weekend with Berkshire Hathaway days, right? And Warren Buffett and all of the, you know, the world's richest people here in town for those. Omaha is kind of, you know, this time of year, there's a lot going on in Omaha around this. And so it's a good, you know, College World Series is coming up, and there's a lot of good things happening here. I have to remember this. This might be, I tried doing, Edward Weninger was thinking about doing a Bitcoin day. Twice they scheduled this Bitcoin day around the Berkshire, meetup. 'Cause, you know, Warren has not been very kind to crypto, right? He's not a big believer in it. So they were going to do it during that weekend on the Sunday. Twice it didn't happen for whatever reason. But this would be kind of fun. I'll have to. So this is the first annual, or have they done this before?
They've never done it before. This is the first one. That's why all these events, they're like we don't know what we do at this event.
Yeah.
You know? Like we're just at this point, a lot of them are just like, we're just going to get together and have some beers and talk. And, you know, TJ took it to the next level and he's actually, you know, having presentations or giveaways or
that's the right way to do it.
Well, we can't call them sponsors, people that help them hold the event.
Why can't you call them sponsors?
There's some legalities. Okay. Yeah, there's legalities around it being a nonprofit, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they've donated some things to give away. So it's nice, you know. So, yeah, it's I guess it's an annual event, but it will be kind of cool.
So TJ says, hey, TJ Huddleston here from hometech.fm. We're excited to host our first ever Home Assistant Community Day for 2025, but we need your assistance. I love this. We'd like to know what you'd like to see. Is it demonstrations, tutorials, physical products, best practices, hardware swap? Listen, hardware swaps are always a great idea, right? Yeah. Put that stuff out. And then there's always a few things left that nobody wants. You just got to recycle this stuff. He says, right now, we're hosting the event at the atrium of the Seventh Sons Brewing.
Yeah, he's at a brewery. He's making me jealous.
Breweries are always the best place to go because they just want bodies, right? Yeah. They'll be fine with that. The Lucky Bucket, which is now that's something else, but that'd work here in Omaha. Right across from the Bud Dairy Food Hall, downtown Columbus. He's got his information out there and about emailing him. TJ's coming on here in a couple weeks. TJ will, let's see, this is the 24th, right?
Yes. So will he be on before?
He'll be on the 29th. So we'll hear how it went.
Yes.
When he's on. Yeah. He's coming on May 29th. So it'll be good. Well, TJ, make sure, I know he's listening. TJ, make sure you take good notes.
Maybe pictures.
Bring some pictures. Yeah.
Yep.
Be fun to, that would be a good, that'd be a good one to do. I love my home assistant. I mean, I run it on a Surface Pro and it just sits here. It's a way underpowered device, but I just need the browser.
Yep.
And it's getting the one thing, Gavin, that about Home Assistant is it updates more than Windows. Like, is that a complaint in the community? Has anybody said to them, could you slow down a little bit or could we do this a little less often or is everybody okay with it? Do you think?
It could go two ways, right? The good part is you don't have to update it. You could just ignore it, and it will. If it's working, just ignore it, and it keeps working, and you're fine.
There's a yellow button. I can't ignore anything.
Like, yeah, I know.
If I see it, I have to update it.
That's the way I am too. And then the other thing is, yes, it updates. They release a monthly update, and that's the first Wednesday of every month. They release the update, right? And then throughout the month, they're releasing point updates to fix bugs. That have been reported. So some people wait to the .1 before they actually do the upgrade. I live on the edge, so I upgrade the day it's released usually. But again, you can upgrade when you want to upgrade. If you want to do it every 6 months, do it every 6 months. But they're always introducing new features, updates to the dashboards, you know, some cool stuff. And if you see something in there that, you know, if you don't see anything in there that interests you, skip that update, you know, if it's working for you, and then just go to the next one. Wait till the next one.
Yeah. No, it's super great. And I can bring that up anywhere and, you know, just turn on all these switches. Or like, it's really what I was looking for from a home automation dashboard perspective. They got that part right. Where the other one, I'm having trouble remembering what the other one was. What's the device that you buy?
The other hubs?
Yeah,
the Hubitat one.
Yeah, I always wanted a better dashboard on that thing.
Yes.
And I, you know, I was like, Home Assistant got it right from a dashboard perspective.
And the dashboards are super customizable. Like, you can geek out on the dashboards so much and make it look like whatever you want if you really have the time for it.
Yeah. How often, I always feel like, maybe once a month I need to go to that. I go to the developer section and see what else it's recognized. Like, it seems like there's new things being added all the time. Do you use the notes for that? Or do you ever just go in and see what else it's discovered or what else is being offered from a dashboard perspective or from a, you know, from a device perspective?
Not really. It's because I play around in it a lot. If it discovers something new, I see the notification. I'll be like, hey, it just recognized, you know, the Bell 5 TV device that was just on my network or something like that. And a lot of times I ignore, because if I'm going to add a device to Home Assistant, I've already gone in there and I'm going in there to add it. The stuff that it may discover is probably not stuff that I care to really add. But yeah, I look at the notes to see whenever they release new updates to see what new they added, new devices they added, or what devices they're about to break on you.
Yeah. Well, like I'm looking at it now, and the TP-Link smart home integration has failed for whatever reason. I'm sure it's password, username and password.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll need to get in there and, but you know, yeah, I, like I'm looking at this. You know, I've got a Wiz integration, right? So I have one light that's a Wiz light, right? And then I have this TP-Link integration. I've got the speedtest.net integration so that every hour I'm checking, right? And it brings back, like, do I need that? No, but it was super cool.
Yeah.
So I did it. I got the Ring integration. I've got a weather app integration. I've got the Philips Hue integration, the meter, the Matter. A internet printing protocol is in there, an iBeacon tracker, the Govee Bluetooth integrations are in there, Home Assistant Supervisor, I think, which everybody has. Of course, Bluetooth, because you have to have that integration, right, when you're exposing Bluetooth out there. And in Google Cast and Android TV, and that's just a smattering of some of the things, right, that are in. By the way, the meter integration is not where I want it to be. I actually find it easier just to use the app on a device.
Than
broadcast it.
So sometimes you just use the app on a device, and I use Home Assistant as the secondary, right? If I want to add any extra little things, but I'm still using the app on the device.
Yeah. Well, and I bought a tablet to put down here that is close enough to the grill area that when I come down, I attach. You know, I use the Bluetooth off the device,
yes.
And then I broadcast it to the web, and I can pick it up from anywhere at that point, right? If I'm logged in, but the Bluetooth integration stuff on it, especially around the Govee stuff that I have, you know, I have Humistats that I use for the scars. Man, that thing is rock solid. It is really, it's really good.
Yeah.
So there's some of those that just nails. Some of them you're like,
yeah.
You know, and the printer. Like the printer integrations are incredible. Like
that's the first thing everyone talks about. That is like the first thing it picks up is your printer.
Oh yeah. Seth mentioned Subaru, and yes, it tells me if the doors are locked or not. Right. Yeah. And I think I just got Gavin. I'll ask you this question too. I've been asking all my tech friends this. So my 4 years of Subaru subscription service, right? Door locks, maintenance reminders, breakdown stuff, right? You know, the app. And I think I paid like $200 for 4 years. It just expired Monday. Like I go to lock the doors on my phone and it's like, nope, can't do that anymore, which never in a million years did I thought I would get into a subscription service with my car, but I'm there, right? Okay, it's $99 a year and $10 a month, right? So it's a typical subscription service. Not terrible. I'm going to pay it. But do I wait? This was Monday. Do I wait to see if I get a deal email from them? Like, hey, like a nudge. Do you think they're going to send me we want you back? Because I haven't resubscribed. I took my credit card off file. I wanted to control this. Do you think I'll get a deal email from them? Should I wait?
For Subaru, I don't think so. I think they're just what does Seth think in the chat there?
Yeah,
but we'll I think they're like, you're gonna want this, you know, you'll be back. We'll wait you out.
This is the King George in the Hamilton, right?
Yes.
You'll be back.
Yeah.
You'll be back. Well, I'm gonna give it. I was just using it like this time of year. I don't really use it that much. Every once in a while, I forget to lock the doors. I'll use it to lock the doors. In the summer and in the winter, of course, I use it to start the car when it's super cold. And I use it to cool down the car when it's super hot. We're not there yet. So I can give it a couple weeks and see. I think I probably will. My VPN, I use, what do I use for a VPN? I use Bitdefender as the as my VPN provider. Without a doubt, at the end of that cycle, I always stop the automatic charge. They immediately send me a 40% discount.
They're different, yes.
Right? I immediately take it. So,
and that's a trick to do when you're buying things online. Add it to your cart, then just close the window. Right. Give it about a week, and you'll probably get a coupon in your email for 20% off.
That's what I'm hoping for. I don't listen. I'm willing to pay. Well, I hope they're not listening. Hold on, my phone is probably listening to me. I'll pay for $99 isn't terrible for that service. It's worth it to me, right? Seth says, probably if you buy a new car.
Yeah, free year again.
Yeah, you know, right on. And then Brian says, you'll be back. Love that character, favorite in the play. That's in Hamilton. That's the best. King George is the best character. And Seth said they gave him 3 years. Yeah, they gave me 4. And I think it was $250 maybe. It seemed like a pretty good deal at the time when I took it. And, you know, Gavin, I remember signing the papers on that car. I mean, it was 4 years ago, but it seems like it was yesterday. And I remember thinking, 4 years? That's forever. Yeah. Sure, that's fine. So, nah, I don't know. Okay, well, I've been asking all my tech friends, do you think I should wait? Or do you think
wait a few weeks. Okay. The thing is, I think they're going to outweigh you. He's missing his auto start right now. I can feel it.
I love it. All right. Well, I'll report back in to see if they send me an email. Last thing with you. Speaking of cars, sorry to hear. Did a car get lifted from your driveway? Did you?
Yeah. In Toronto area, crime has gone up a lot in our area in the last number of years, and stolen vehicles has been a hot topic. Really? Yes, they basically have been they've been cracking down on the ring, all the car theft rings, but more just pop up, and they've been stealing the cars out of Toronto, driving them to Montreal, shipping them out of Montreal, that type of stuff, right? And in our neighborhood, trucks are a hot item. They've been going for trucks. So my neighbor parks their
pickup trucks.
Pickup trucks. So our neighbor parks their truck in our driveway. So one morning, my camera woke me up to notify me there's a person in the driveway. And at first, it's 2:30 in the morning. You don't know where you are at that point. You had a good dream going on, you know. And I thought my neighbor was leaving early to go to work at that point. You know, I didn't even know what time it was. I was like, he's just leaving early. And then it binged me again. Hey, someone's still in your driveway. I go, he's usually faster than that. So I got up out of my bed, looked out the window, and there were two people standing in the truck. The door was open, and they were standing right by the truck. I was like, oh, crap, they don't look familiar. So, you know, quickly, you know, I'm getting clothes on. I'm calling him at 2:30. I'm like, hey, are you leaving right now? He's like, is this a joke? And I go, at 2:30 in the morning, I would never do that to you, right? Yeah. And I'm like, someone's just took off with your car. At that point, the car's just driving off.
Okay.
Right? And, you know, of course, then the police got involved. It made it up to the second street before I think the immobilizer kicked in, right? So his wife was actually out on the street, and they ran by her as they took off, you know. But they still caused $1,000 worth of damage. You know, we had to get it towed. I didn't get to bed till like 6:30 that morning, you know. It was an experience, you know, and it changes the way you look at security around your house and stuff in general. But one thing that, you know, I was being applauded for was the camera setup. You know, maybe I didn't act on it at that time, but the way I have it set up. So one of our learning things in that, because we went to all the neighbors and we were like, okay, do you have any camera footage? Do you have any camera footage? And one thing we learned is everybody's camera setup is garbage. Like, they send you is either really bad quality or it's pointing at nothing or some, you know, you thought that they would have a view of maybe their driveway, but they just install these Ring cameras and they were like, okay, you know, and you don't realize it until something happens how bad of a setup it is, you know? So of course they start asking me, well, what should I get? What should I do? I want to bump it up now, you know, and stuff like that. But the other thing that I think a lot of these thieves are preying on is the fact that the notifications on these devices are awful too. So you could set it up. I know they've gotten better. I think, I don't know if Ring allows this, but you could set it up to notify if there's someone in the driveway, but can you set it up to only notify you at night while you're sleeping or something like that? You know, I'm hearing people's phones go off all day long because they don't know how to use the system, or the camera they have doesn't allow that. And it's just motion. There's no person detection. So it dings them for everything and you become immune to that. Right. And at night when they put their phone in do not disturb, it won't wake them up. So the thieves know that nobody's waking up because they're on do not disturb and stuff like that. So there's a lot, you know, if you have a camera set up and you're really serious about the security, take these things into consideration. You know, like you don't want it dinging you all day long for every piece of motion. You want to get something that has smarts that can pick up a person, but you also want it to be good enough that it's not mistaking other things for people. So I have the Unify Protect that I'm using, and there's something called the Unify Port, and it's a little device that you kind of pair to any OnVIF camera, right? And it converts it into like all the, it gives it all the smarts of the Unify, but the person detection is amazing. I used to run Blue Iris. I've totally switched off of that now. Blue Iris would have false alarms, or it would detect my pool pump as a person or something like that, right? And it was very hard to tweak it to get it right.
Yeah.
And it was one of the reasons why I didn't really have it on at night, because it kept dinging for rent. A car would drive by and the reflection in the window of the car would trigger it and stuff like that, right? But with the Unify setup, it's so good. I haven't gotten false alarms even when it's raining or snowing or anything. If it dings me that there's a person in the driveway, there's a person in the driveway.
Yeah.
Right. And I have it so that at night when the alarm is on, and we're, even if I'm in do not disturb mode, it will wake me up and say, hey, there's a person in the driveway. So we're now trained that when we hear that, we jump out of bed and we look out the windows.
Mm.
We have it. We're trained now.
Yeah.
So next time they try, we'll be ready.
We had back in, I was looking for this, back in July of 2022, I had Dave Sellinger from Deep Sentinel on. And they're kind of doing a AI plus people, right? So it's kind of this, and, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I want to jump out of bed. Like, I don't know if I want to be my own security guy. Like, yes. I like sleeping, right? And I couldn't, I almost wouldn't mind, you know, they're kind of what they install or what they get, you know, the AI is making sure it's a person. And then a real person is picking up and saying, hey, we're watching you. Right. Or I need you to move on. Or, you know, are you sure you want to do that kind of thing? And I kind of wonder, you know, I think if I was, I mean, we've had our car, the reason I have Ring cams is because on New Year's Day, 4 years ago, maybe, we had somebody go through the cars. Now, they didn't steal them, but they went through and took cables and stuff. Like, they were searching for money or wallets or whatever. So it spooked me enough that I thought I'll put a Ring cam up there. Now, we haven't had any. The cam itself is so visible and out in the middle of the open. I think that has some deterrent on it. But when we had Dave on, it got me thinking, like, if I was in an area where I was struggling with it more, I think I'd almost pay to have a person monitoring it rather than me waking up or putting me in danger to confront whoever's stealing the car. Right. Or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
And I understand, like, the camera, I thought it would be a deterrent too. It's not.
No.
They are fully covered up. They're looking at the camera. You know, my camera, when it detects a person, it triggers all the lights to turn on to and everything like that. They didn't care about anything. Now, the one nice thing about it when it woke us up is the fact that when we went out there and then they took off, we were able to get the vehicle back. Now, if like you said, if they drove off, you know, they'll eventually know that, hey, that's just somebody talking through a speaker, right? And they'll still take your vehicle. And if they got around the corner, they would have still been fighting with that vehicle and maybe have gotten it started back and taken off with it. And we would have lost the whole vehicle altogether. Right. So, you know, it depends on how much you want to do. I rather, you know, my thing was I want to be notified, but I want no false notifications. And well, that's how
the
I
real
got
trick, you. Right?
Yes.
That's the real trick. Because you get woke up in the middle of the night a dozen times and then you're like, yes. Oh.
And that's where the Unify has gotten it really good because, again, I also set the zone. So it's only on my driveway, not on the sidewalk and stuff like that, right? But it's really good at knowing a person.
Yeah.
And yeah. I get no false notifications.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm a Ring guy. And I think I could pay Ring to do what Deep Sentinel does. I think that's available now through them. And that's an Amazon company. We have a fairly tight neighborhood and I don't have that concern right now. If we were having more crime, I probably would up it a little bit just to get, cause it'd be worth something to me. You know, it's a $500 deductible. If the car gets stolen, even if you get it back, you know, the repairs still $500. I don't know. It's a really good question. Tell you what's helpful is really good neighbors. That's right. I know you have them too. We're on a fairly busy street. We haven't had very many problems in a while, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. We're in a nice neighborhood and we know all the neighbors, but this is the funny part is when we were out there at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, fiddling around with the car, trying to get it, you know, we had to get it towed and everything. We set off the alarm on the car like twice. It's sitting in the middle of the road. The alarm's blaring, you know, and nobody looked out their window or nobody called the police or nobody did anything. So it's like, even if your alarm's going off, people are just, I don't want to look. It's somebody else. Mm-hmm. Right. So that we found weird too. Right. Like we could have been stealing the car.
Yeah. I just, for me, one of those things, is it worth it to confront? You know, you never know.
Right. Yeah, you never know. That too. But I also want to be able to call the police and say, hey, it's gone right now. You know, they actually came really fast. When we called them, they came extremely fast.
There's nothing going on at 4.
Exactly. I hope not. Tim Hortons is closed at that time.
Yeah, that's if you're ever in need, just it needs to be like between 3 and... between 2 and 4 is usually the day. I used to deliver newspapers when I was in college. I delivered USA Today, and I'd get up at 3, and I would show up at this, you know, the pick up the papers at 4, and I'd deliver the papers between 4 and 6, and then I'd drive over to the bank, sneak in the back door, change, and go to college. That was my college. I'd literally be changing in the stairwell because I had to dress up for college in those days. And so I would, you know, I'd be in grungy clothes for the newspapers. And then I would head over to the bank, sneak in the back door. Our back door, the alarm didn't trigger on the back door. It was on the other doors where it triggered. So I could sneak in, change, jump back in the car and go to school. But the most quiet, peaceful time ever.
It's nice.
2 to 4. Everybody's chilled. Everybody's like, a convenience store at 2 a.m. is like super chilled.
Yes.
Right. Now I was never there at 2, but I was always there around 4, you know, 4 or 5. You hit 6, 5:30, 6, then you have your morning commute kicking off. And I always tried to be done with my route by 6 because I did not want to be on the roads. 6 after 6, it just was morning commuters, and they are not friendly people. They are not friendly people. So it was your neighbor's car. You got it back. All is well, I'm assuming. Did you do anything? Are you going to do anything different? I mean, are you going to change
anything? I'm actually upgrading. So they have Ring cameras around their place. So I kind of sat down with them and taught them how to use it and helped them configure it and give them better peace of mind. Yeah. So I set up the AI stuff, got them on the subscription. The only thing is it's not as smart where it's only at night. So they're constantly dinging and they're fine with that. And I'm like, okay, if you're fine with that, that's fine. My camera setup, it works great, but I also got the okay from the wife to upgrade the front camera.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, I'm going to get something higher quality, much clearer picture. Even though the picture is pretty good because it gets upscaled with AI using the AI port, I want something that's much clearer at night, especially with the starlight sensors and stuff where, you know, the picture at night almost looks like it's taken in the day, right? TJ showed me examples of this, and it's pretty amazing. So I'm going to work on doing that and putting some PoE cameras in there and stuff like that. So it's not on Wi-Fi. It's off my Wi-Fi. So I got the okay for it.
Nice.
So yeah, nice. That's the important part.
Yeah. Yeah. My Ring camera is my first camera. And it's on the front door, right? That's the gateway camera, right? Is your front, is your doorknob or is your doorbell. And the plastic covering has started to, it's starting to crack. It's right in the sun. I mean, it gets just blistered. And so as I'm looking at it right now, you're like, okay, it's okay. You know, but it would be nice. And as you're talking about night vision, I could easily install some really dim low lights from the top in the soffit that would, for a low light camera, would just light that thing up, right? You never see them.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're just putting some really dim low light things in there that would, you know, and with today's cameras would just illuminate everything.
I think the other thing you can put in is IR lights. So you would not see them at
correct.
All.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But then you can get bigger ones and they'd light up your whole backyard. Yeah, that's
probably a good idea.
Right. And you can, and having that, because the IR lights on most cameras are built into the camera.
Right.
So that's why you see rain and snow messing with the picture. But if you offset the IR lights, you're not going to get the rain and snow and the spiders and stuff, which I constantly get spiders on my cameras. I'm constantly out there with a broom brushing away. Right. But they'll be attracted to the IR lights off to the side, and that'll be much better.
Okay, they're attracted to the IR, huh? Is that
It's the freakiest thing, because then I'll go back to my footage and I'll see a spider building his web right in front of it. I could do a time lapse video of that if I wanted to.
Early this spring, we had a couple birds that were landing on top. I think they were looking for nesting places. And so we were just getting alerts with these bird faces,
you
know, right in there. It was like that Birdify or Birdfy half for the hummingbird, right? It was like that. Now they stopped doing that because I think they found places to live. But as I'm looking at my cameras, I remember getting alerts and then they're, oh, there's a blackbird. Oh, there's a bluebird. Yeah.
And they're looking right in.
They're looking right at the camera like, hey, can I nest here? You know, is it okay? Is this a place I can nest? So. Yeah, it gets me thinking, you know, I have a camera out the front door. I have a camera out the driveway. I have a camera in the garage just that would tell me if the garage door was open or not, right? Yeah. I could quickly look. I'm not worried about, well, maybe I should, but I wasn't typically worried about someone coming in the garage. And then one in the backyard, and that backyard one gets sent off by the wind starts blowing and the smoker cover starts moving. It triggers it every time, right?
And I was watching YouTube. I can't remember the YouTube channel, but what he did is it really opened my eyes to this, but planning cameras. So if you're serious about cameras, he said plan the camera so that like in certain areas, you have to see a certain distance and you want a certain quality, right? So you want the quality camera just for that above your garage, maybe.
Yeah.
Right. But then at your front door, you only have to see a few feet out and, you know, you don't need the super high quality because everyone's right in that range. So you can go with something less. Right. And same with your backyard. He's like, if it's just at the door, you want to catch or something, you don't need a high quality camera. You can go with something cheaper for right there. And that's kind of how I'm looking at it too.
That's not a bad way. And of course, being on Ring, they kind of got you know, their subscription service is kind of what gets you. And I keep paying it. I don't know. I like it.
It's a convenience.
It is convenient. Super convenient. The front door cam, you know, we bought one of those delivery boxes. And so it's right in front of the camera. And so that's actually been helpful to just know the boxes are there. Like, okay, we've got a box. And they do a nice job of detecting, hey, a box has been detected, right? Kind of thing. So super cool. Gavin, anything coming up on Home Tech that I didn't mention that earlier, but I'll mention it here at the end. How's it going on Home Tech? Anything coming up you want to highlight?
Oh, it's we're always over there having a great time. Recently, we released an episode. We had Agnes from Zuz. So Zuz is one of our favorite Z-Wave device companies out there. We had her over there. But this time we had her on, we were talking the effects of tariffs on their company.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So it was a really insightful thing to understand how tariffs is hurting like a smaller business like that. So we had her on. So check out that show. Something going forward. I've reached out to a few companies, and they're sending me some PoE or network connected Z-Wave or Zigbee controllers, right? Okay. Because my thought is right now you have your hub, your home assistant, it's in the basement corner, you know, for things to get to it, it's, you know, the coverage is kind of iffy. Well, if you had a network connected one, I can place that anywhere in my home. And then Z-Wave would communicate with that. And then over the network, it would then communicate with Home Assistant. And, you know, you could get better coverage and things like that. So I will be getting a few of those in. They're on their way, and then reviewing those in the coming months.
Well, if you haven't, if you're new to the show or you haven't checked it out, hometech.fm, Gavin, TJ, and Seth on a weekly, yep. Right? Weekly basis. And they're it's like this show, but better. Let's just
nah. It's
you, maybe you guys geekier. Are way better. You guys are way better.
You continue the conversation better than Seth does. He's not listening right now.
He might be. I saw him out there in chat. You
should. Nah, he's good too.
Hometech.fm. Check it out today, and you know it'll be interesting to see where these tariffs go with all this tech. You know,
they're impacting these companies big time.
Yeah. I think we're still, you know, I think we expect these things to happen right away. And I think the consumer is still a couple months or maybe even 6 months away from the real impact of some of these. And then of course, I don't even know why I'm even allowed to talk to you, Gavin. I mean, you're Canadian, I'm American. Oh, should we be talking to each other?
You know,
you forgive me for being American?
Is yeah, that okay, like all the American, I don't blame every American for this, only some of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, I appreciate you, you being kind to me. It's interesting times on that. And of course, I think that'll affect some of our tech. You know, some of our tech decisions, you know, I keep an eye on hard drives and, you know, immediately, you know, beginning of the year, we were down, you know, hard drives were, you know, $10 a terabyte, so to speak. Right. So, which isn't bad. Right. But that's gone up 30 or 40% but those are used drives. Those aren't tariff induced drives. That's talking a little bit about the demand and some expectation that, with the newer drives going up, there'll be some prices going up on the used drives, right? In that used drive space.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Gonna say some companies have come out and posted, you know, how much the tariffs have affected them. And we've talked about that. Like Wyze recently came out and said, you know, they just paid $255,000 on $167,000 worth of product.
Yeah.
Who's going to eat that cost?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of companies are temporarily eating it because they don't want to raise prices on their consumers. And then, I mean, we already went through a period of inflation. Yep. So, you know, a drive enclosure that I bought 3 years ago for $45 is now $90. And same thing. It's the same exact thing, right? And, you know, an IC dock, drive dock. And, you know, so you're like, we've already experienced a period of high inflation and then tariffs on top of that. And you're like, I think a lot of retailers are being sensitive to that. And they're like, well, maybe we'll hold to see where this really goes. So I think some of them are eating that cost right now. Yeah. But I think by summer here in the United States, anyways, for our friends down under, your winter, I think, or it's South America. I think we're gonna, we haven't even seen yet what that can be. So buckle up, friends. We may get back to the days of recycling old technology of just getting stuff. I know this. I don't have 30 dolls anymore. I just have three. That's all I need. I just need three dolls. It'll be fine. I'm fine with three dolls. it'll be just fine. You know, I don't need 30. I don't need three. Maybe if you put in hard drives, I don't need 30 hard drives. I just need 3 hard drives. Maybe that's the.
And I'm a big advocate of the used hardware market, right? Like, whenever I need something, I look on Marketplace first and stuff like that to look if somebody's getting rid of one.
Right? Marketplace would be the place to go, right? Yeah. Local, because, that would be the place to go. Maybe I
reduce e-waste.
Yeah, maybe I need to do that more. You know, I've thought about just offering to recycle for people. Like, hey, if you've got old equipment that you want recycled, I'll just come pick it up. You know, I'll come pick it up and then take the parts that I want and recycle the rest. That's super easy, you know, kind of thing. But listen, the day of the PC for most people is over. Everybody's on their phones or they got an iPad or
Yes.
We're the only ones doing it as well. Well, Gavin, thanks for, I didn't intend to get political there. We did a little bit. It's interesting times. Gavin, can you hang around as I wrap this thing up? All right.
Awesome. For sure.
Couple reminders on the way out. If you want to join the Discord group, and that's the kindest Discord group in the world, literally. Check it out today, theaverageguy.tv/Discord. Just jump in there if you want to join in the conversation. We maybe have 2 conversations a week, so it's pretty slow. It's just fun. Some people like it that way, so check it out. A big thanks to Christian over there at Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. And, of course, you know this, Christian. We'll have him back on the show here in, I don't know, a couple months. He just had a baby, so congratulations. Well, he didn't, but his wife did. And so we'll get him back on here. But if you need hosting, he's got it available, maplegrovepartners.com. And if you got any feedback for the show, I haven't heard from a lot of you for a while, so maybe this is the week. Send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.com. Is that right? Yeah. jim@theaverageguy.tv. I have to say this at work too. And I was like, did I just give out my work address? jim@theaverageguy.tv. And love to have you and your feedback as well. Neil, I haven't heard from you in a while. I'm a little worried about you. So send me a note, Neil. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know you're doing okay. We are live every Thursday now, 7 p.m. Central. I'm going to try and get to this for all going forward. 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern. I know I've been working back and forth on this thing. Tony, sorry you didn't get the message today. I've been trying to get that Discord and some of the other things so folks know. But let's just assume from here on out, 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern. Gavin, you like that time, right? That's the time.
Yeah, it works much better for me. Yep.
Yeah, I think for most people it does. Out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. If you're in the live audience, stay around for a tiny little portion. But with that, we'll say goodbye.